Hi, everybody. This is Bill once more, and this is our latest For What It's Worth. This is where I just talk and share my opinions on some of the things that are in the news of late. And this time, I wanted to talk about politics. Now, I realize that according to conventional way of thinking, there's two things that you're not supposed to discuss in public, and that is religion and politics. Well, I talk about both of those, and today we're going to talk about the latter, politics. Not so much the pros and cons of different candidates or parties or things like that, but just what's going on in the political world, and more importantly, share my views as how that is a reflection of what's going on within the country, and even more specifically, within the body of the Messiah. So now, as we begin, I will make the assumption that most of you that are viewing this lean somewhat conservative. You may not necessarily be Republican, you may be an independent, maybe you don't care anymore. But as far as your way of thinking, I'm assuming that most of you think in a more conservative, more traditional way, not progressive, not liberal. With that in mind, I've been observing the catfight, or I should say the catfights that are going on within the Republican Party, watching the debates and the attacks and just the viciousness between these different candidates who are supposed to be on the same side, more or less. They're supposed to be, in general, for the same thing, for the same kinds of principles, returning to the Constitution, protecting the borders, freedom, liberty, all those kinds of things. And to see these men, and until she dropped out, one woman, just coming at one another all the time is rather discouraging. It's rather distressing, and especially when you consider that there is a field of candidates, and among those that field of candidates, there's the potential for a good leader. Well, I know that some people may take objection with that, but I hope you understand what I'm trying to say here. My point is, it's discouraging to see those who are on the same side fighting one another because, number one, as they tear one another down, their political adversaries are taking note of this, as is the rest of the country. And whoever the Republican nominee ends up being, it's likely that whatever arguments have been made against them during the course of the primaries and the different caucuses, you know their political adversaries are going to take note of this and they're going to try to make those things stick and to try to demean them before the general election in November. All right, now, specifically, there have been accusations of lies and dirty politics and all these kinds of things. And I, you know, look, my view is that there are very, very few politicians who are going to do what's right as opposed to what's politically expedient. I would like to believe that there are those out there, but I believe that they're very rare. And if you've listened to me or read anything that I've written or listened to anything I've taught, you've probably heard me say from time to time that when it comes to politics, I don't believe there's but maybe a handful of people who are willing to stand up and say, look, if I'm elected, I'm going to do what's written in the Word of God. And the reason they won't say those things is because they know that in this culture today, they probably wouldn't get elected. And so what does that say for our culture? And all of that is to just make the point that I don't have a political axe to grind here. I do have a political opinion, but I'm not here to advocate for a particular candidate or come against another one. I'm just saying that it is distressing to see the attacks going on between these different candidates. Now, that is a reflection of the country because that's what's going on within the country. But even more importantly, and I believe this is, you know, really needs to be the main point here, is what we see going on in the political process because it is a reflection of what's going on in the country. What's going on in the country is a reflection of what's going on within the body. That is, attacking one another, strife, accusations, trying to undermine one another so that the other party appears to be right. So let me make sure you're following me here. The reason we see these things going on in the political realm is because that is a reflection of the country at large. But the reason the country at large is in that predicament is because, or at least in part, and I think primarily because, of things that are going on within the body. Because we have to understand that when it comes to God hearing from heaven, forgiving our sin, and healing our land, it is not up to the world or secular America as to whether or not God heals the land. It is up to my people, which are called by my name. If they, not the rest of the world, not the rest of the country, but if they humble themselves, seek my face and pray, and turn from their wicked ways, then I'll hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and heal their land. So, now, in 1858, some of you, if you're an amateur historian like I am, or you're familiar with Abraham Lincoln's A House Divided speech. The topic at that time was slavery and how the country, so argued Lincoln, could not continue to be half free and half slave. And so he borrowed from the Messiah. When Messiah said the house divided against itself can't stand, Lincoln used that principle to apply it to the politics of the day. Of course, we all know that he was later elected as President of the United States, and then, of course, the Civil War broke out just literally days and weeks after he became the president. Now, a few years ago, back in 2000, you'll recall when Bush and Gore were running against one another as president, and then it got down to the state of Florida and hanging chads, and courts and lawyers had to get involved to decide who was going to be the president. And the outcome of that particular election cycle proved to me that we are a nation divided. And as a matter of fact, it was in that first few years of Bush's presidency, the Senate, which is 100 senators, was divided right down the middle, 50-50, as if to say, you know, here it is, your country is divided. And so it was in that time that I wrote an article about the next American Civil War, but I said it would be an uncivil war, where your neighbor, your enemy is not so much north and south, it's not determined by the Mason-Dixon line, your enemy might be living next door, because it's a philosophical war. It's an ideology. Your enemy might be living in your own house. And so I wrote about how this civility had been lost and we were just attacking one another. Well, I bring that out because that was 15, 16 years ago, and it's only worsened. So I'm not surprised then to see what's going on in the political realm. And as I said, I find it distasteful, it's discouraging. And then when you consider the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia recently, and how he was probably the most eloquent and most vibrant conservative voice on the bench, and now he's gone, and as one presidential candidate said, we're only one Supreme Court justice away from all of our liberties and rights disappearing. And I have to agree with that. All right, so let's bring it back to us now as a people, as God's people. How can we expect our country or the world to act civilly? How can we expect the world to even want to mend fences and to try to restore civility and some semblance of peace if we can't give them that example within the body? So now, I want to read to you what Messiah actually said when he talked about a house divided. This is in Mark chapter 3, and it begins in verse 24, and he says this, "And if a kingdom be divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. And if a house be divided against itself, that house will not stand." And so, he was speaking to his people in that regard. I mean, the context of those statements was when he was accused of performing certain miracles by the power of Satan. And of course, he just said, you know, that's ridiculous. You know, how is Satan going to come against himself? And and that's when he went into a house divided against itself cannot stand. Well, the principle is that, look, if you're split, if you're divided, if there's contention, if you're fighting against yourself, you don't have to worry about external foes coming against you. You're going to destroy yourself. And that's exactly the point that Lincoln was making. That's exactly what he went on to say in another speech. Now, here's what we as believers should be doing. We should be coming together and reasoning with one another. Doesn't mean that we necessarily will always agree with one another. We know that's impossible in this world. But the example that we have is when the Creator says to His people, come now, let us reason together. You know, God's reasonable. I'm not saying that He compromises. I'm not saying that He makes excuses for activity that's wrong. I'm just saying that God, you know, comes to us and says, okay, let's reason with one another. Let's talk these things out and let's go step by step, and I'm going to show you why my ways are the only ways that make sense. But God doesn't strong arm us into coming around to His way of thinking. God is not judgmental as we are. I mean, we read in Exodus chapter 34, if we begin around verse 5, I believe it is, when God describes Himself to Moses. And in that description, He talks about how He's merciful, long-suffering, He's compassionate, He's abundant in mercy and truth. Now, He points out that He doesn't allow the guilty to go unpunished. He visits the iniquity unto the third and the fourth generations. But He speaks much more of being merciful, compassionate, long-suffering, abundant in mercy and truth, much more so than He does being ready to judge somebody for their guilt. So if that describes the Creator, and the Creator is who we are supposed to emulate, who we're supposed to pattern our lives after. He says, I'm holy, you be holy. We're supposed to be what He is. And so if He is to be perceived as much more merciful and compassionate and long-suffering and reasonable than He is quick to anger and ready to judge and all those things, then that's how we should be perceived as well. And because we are not, and that's the facts, because as the body we are not perceived that way, then we have this division, we have this strife, we have all this juvenile behavior, and that's what Paul calls it, by the way, in 1 Corinthians. Because we're acting like juveniles, well, we can't expect anything less in our nation. And now we're seeing that on our television screens being manifested by political candidates who want to leave this country, but who some of them, not all, but some of them are embroiled in these little juvenile schoolyard back and forth nanny nanny boo-boos and all this kind of stuff. So now I want to go to Zechariah here, and I want to read something in Zechariah chapter 14, verse 9. It says this, and the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day there shall be one Lord and His name one. All right, here's why I read this. We are supposed to be whatever He is. Whatever the Messiah is, that's what we're supposed to be. Whatever the Messiah does, that's what we're supposed to do. I already kind of alluded to that just a moment ago. He's the head of the body. So everything that pertains to the head is supposed to filter down to the body. And that means then that because He's the seed of the woman in Genesis 3, well, we are regarded in Revelation 12 as the remnant of her seed. That is, if we keep His commandments and have the testimony of Yeshua, then we are called the remnant of her seed. That is the woman. The Messiah is the good seed that is sown in the parable of the sower because He's the Word of God. That's what we're told the seed represents. But that same good seed is sown in the parable of the wheat and tares. It grows into wheat. And the Messiah says the wheat are the sons of the kingdom. So then He's the good seed. We're to be the good seed. He is, according to Peter, a living stone, that we are to come unto Him as to a living stone. And then Peter turns around and says, we are living stones. Whatever He is, that's what we're supposed to be. He's the light of the world. And then He tells us that we're the light of the world. He is the Son of God. But as to as many as received Him, to them He gave the right, that is the power and the ability, to become the sons of God. We're being conformed to the image of the Son of God, because whatever He is, that's what we are supposed to be. And so we read in Zechariah that He is one, that He is Echad. And so if He is Echad, then we're supposed to be Echad. Because when we are Echad, according to what Messiah says in John chapter 17, He prayed for His disciples then, 2,000 years ago, and for those, every one of those who would hear and believe in Him through their testimony, which includes you and me. And He prayed that we would be one, that we would be Echad, that we would be one, just as the Father is in the Son and the Son is in the Father, and that we would be one in them. And here's the reason, He says, so that the world may know that the Father has sent the Son. I guess what I'm trying to get across here is our behavior, our obedience, or our lack of obedience and our childish behavior will most definitely have a direct influence on the culture. It will have an influence on the land. And so if those who wish to lead our country are bickering, fighting, arguing, and dividing the country further, it's ultimately because it is a reflection of what is going on within the body. Now, I realize that, you know, with all the division in the country and the wickedness in the country, it would be really easy for us as believers to focus on all their problems. And while we do that, that deflects the attention off of us and our responsibility in this. I know that there are some that would be thinking, well, you know, this country is done, God's through with this country, and besides, this country needs to fail, needs to fall, because ultimately all kingdoms are going to become the kingdoms of our God and of His Messiah. Well, that latter part of what I just said is absolutely true. It is true that the kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of our God and of His Messiah. Ultimately, every knee will bow. And it is true that this country manifests wickedness, and with every passing day, we turn farther and farther and farther away from God. And so ultimately, we will have to answer for those national sins. But now, my point is this. We might be tempted to say, well, you know, I'm not going to participate in the political process. I'm not going to get involved with that. I'm not going to be too focused on what those people are doing, because this country's turned away from God and it's just done. That being said, maybe the reason God has to bring this nation to its knees, and maybe the reason that God has to bring this nation to a place where everything that we've been able to depend upon that is good, that is a blessing, maybe He has to bring that to a close because those through which He wished to work, the body, you and me, didn't respond. Let me make sure you're understanding what I'm saying. Is God just going to judge this nation just because it's time to judge this nation? Or is God going to judge this nation because His people didn't embrace the responsibility they had to be the oracles of God at this time, to be that light in the midst of the darkness, to avoid some unnecessary, perhaps, judgment and chastisement? Because the way I see it, and the way I understand the Scripture, God doesn't spend a lot of time talking to the nations. He spends most of His time talking to His people in the nations. And He spends most of His time talking to His people about how to affect the nations. And so I'm trying to say that ultimately, what we are seeing going on in our country comes back to us. It comes back to being our responsibility. Like I said, it's easy to believe and to say that God's going to destroy this culture because it's wicked and it's adulterous and it's this and it's that. Well, why is that, though? Because ultimately it becomes our responsibility. Now, I'm not ignoring that the wicked do what the wicked do. I'm not ignoring that there's always been wickedness. There's always been people who are not going to listen to God. I realize that. I get that. I know that there have been preachers of righteousness and the world didn't listen to them. I realize that as well. But that doesn't negate the fact that if we want to see this nation healed, if it's God's will, if it's God's permissible will that this nation be healed, it's not going to be healed by what we see going on within these debates and these primaries and the tearing one another apart. That's not going to heal the nation. Frankly, I don't believe that anybody as proficient as they may be in business is going to heal this nation's economy or this nation's security just because they happen to be proficient at that. Because what we might really be dealing with here, ladies and gentlemen, is that God is bringing us to a place that we've got to really make some choices. A lot of people are expressing their anger and distaste for government and politics in general by getting behind candidates who are so-called outside the beltway. And in some cases, and I guess I'm going to give something away here, but in some cases, there are evangelicals who are willing to overlook certain things in certain candidates just because they're saying things we want to hear. That's how Germany ended up with Hitler. Because Hitler told the people what they wanted to hear. He said what they wanted to say. And because they were so angry, they were willing to overlook a lot of things about the man. And they paid the price for that. What am I trying to get across here? We don't have a political problem. We don't have an economic problem. We don't have a security problem. We have a spiritual problem. And you can't fix a spiritual problem with the greatest financier or the greatest constitutionalist or a socialist or a woman. You're not going to resolve those problems with political philosophy, personality, party. The only way to fix the problem in this country, if it's going to be fixed, is when God's people realize that we need to humble ourselves, that we need to seek His face and pray, and we need to turn from our wicked ways. I don't know about you, but I am sick and tired of going into a polling booth and feeling like that I am being forced to choose between the lesser of two evils. I'm tired of that. The last time I voted for somebody was in 1984 in a general election. Ever since then, I've voted against other people. The other guy, the other party. I'm tired of feeling like I have to choose between the lesser of two evils, because really what that amounts to is which side of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil am I going to eat from, the right or the left? End result's still the same. So I hope that you're kind of following along with me here, and I hope I didn't lose some of you when I ventured into the political realm there and maybe alluded to your candidate. But the issue is still this. What we're seeing going on in politics is a reflection of what's going on within the body. It's ugly. It's distasteful. And if we're going to fix it, then you and I need to do it. Starting today, going to our knees in humility and asking God's forgiveness and learning how to treat one another a lot better than we have. Because a house divided against itself cannot stand. Whether we're talking about nations, a household, a family, a people, it won't be. We have to be what God is, Echad. We have to emulate His attributes and His characteristics to be abundant in mercy and truth. We don't ignore the guilty. It's just that, like Him, we must be slow to anger. We must be long-suffering, not willing that any should perish. Because if you think about it, His heart is this: for God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. Well, that's what's important to His heart. It should be what's important to ours. So, that's my 2 cents this time, for what it's worth. We'll see you next time.